Bradstreet and Tom Rissi.
Hello and welcome back to Depth of Field with Tom Racine, that's me, and Tim Bradstreet, that's him.
Hello.
And we have to apologize, we're fighting off colds and cat allergies and all sorts of fun things here today. But we wanted to talk to you guys in a long time. It's been a long time. It's been quite a while since we actually had a podcast,
isn't it? It's been a while since we put that Jim Daly thing up there.
We've
been promising that that Ron Perlman, Tom Jane interview for a while.
We've got the Ron Perlman part, but we don't have the Tom Jane part. But we'll be talking about that later because there's more dark country news and all sorts of stuff going on because Tim has been jetting back and forth to L.A. to do his big wig Hollywood thing.
Yeah, jetting. I've been driving back and forth.
I meant in a Jetta, actually. But first, I thought we'd start off with the big news that came off of your blog about leaving The Punisher. Apparently, as of issue 60 of The Punisher Max series at Marvel, you will be taking your leave along with Garth Ennis. Is there anything you want to tell your loyal fans about this?
You kind of blindsided me with that because you were talking about Punisher a few minutes ago. I thought you were talking about the movie.
Oh, that movie. Oh,
And so when you said you wanted to talk about The Punisher, that's what I thought you were talking about.
The one with Dolph Lundgren?
I was saying, well, you know, there's a lot of stuff I can't talk about. He goes, well, you can just talk about the stuff you talked about on your blog. Well, were you talking about leaving The Punisher?
I'm talking about leaving The Punisher. You had no idea. Serious. I'm just like, yeah, I know this is your big thing. You're leaving The Punisher. You're not doing the covers anymore. You've got, what, three more to go, I think you said?
Now, this is not my big thing. You know, the big thing was getting the job. Leaving the job is not a big thing at all.
But you've got, what, three more to do, and then you're out. Is that the last issue that Garth is going to be doing?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. Garth's leaving with 60, and I've said, I guess, you know, I said this a couple years ago to my editor. I'm not sure, you know, when this train's going to end, but if it does, I think I'd like to leave when Garth leaves, because I just wanted to keep that part of the team intact. You know, there's been a lot of pencilers that have come and gone. There's been a hell of a lot of, probably more editors than pencilers, editors and assistant editors who've come and gone since Garth and I started doing it. You know, the original team was Steve Dillon and Jimmy Palmiotti. And of course that was a very, very popular, you know, welcome back, Frank. And then I'm not sure how many issues they lasted into the Marvel Knights series before Dillon decided to, he'd done a lot with it and just wanted to do something else. He was burnt out, too. Pardon my sniffling.
It's beautiful.
And then creative teams revolved. And on that Marvel Knights series, it was, in my opinion, some of those creative teams were questionable. But when it went to Max, you know, they started with Louis LaRosa, and they've had very solid core group of talent on that. The Mother Russia arc was a particular favorite of mine, with Dougie Braithwaite and Bill Reinhold doing the art.
So you're leaving after 8 years.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about me leaving. So Garth and I, you know, I mean, I'd been with him on this thing since day one. We were like the one constant on the book. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what's carried it through 8 years, you know. So it's definitely bittersweet to leave. I think I was ready for a break, you know.
Yeah,
just
it's a long time.
Recharge the batteries, you know, and maybe, you know, come back to it in 6 months and you know, have a different direction for what I was doing.
Have you left that door open? Is this, you know, you could come back and do more Punisher stuff, or is this pretty much it?
No, you know, when you do a body of work, it's like anybody that does a body of work that's, you know, for you know, as much as I hear, respected, and not trying to toot my own horn, but it's been a pretty, you know, positive experience, mainly from the fan standpoint. I mean, I hear a lot of things, you know, and there is bitching, you know, there are people who complain.
Well,
but there's going to be those people anywhere. But my point is, when you kind of carve out a niche for yourself, and you know, it's like a TV show. I don't mean to make this sound too big. I'm just trying to make an analogy that people can kind of easily understand. You know, when Seinfeld goes off the air or MASH goes off the air, you know, they're not going to come back in 6 months and.
Well, they did with After MASH, and well, look how that worked.
The Jamie Farr, Harry Morgan show.
Seinfeld 2.
So come back to it, right, you know, in the near future, full time, probably not. But I would like to, you know, do a trade paperback cover or an annual, or, you know, I would like to revisit it from time to time.
Yeah,
I think that'd
be
cool. And they'll find a reason to do that. It's Marvel. Come on. You know, they'll go, oh, you know, this, it may not happen for a while, but eventually there'll be some, you know, at least some marketing angle where it'll make sense to the bean counters, the people that, you know, try to, you know, figure out new ways to move books. We'll go, let's bring Tim Bradstreet back. Sorry, I had to move away from the mic there for a second while I adjusted myself.
Had to step way back.
And I mean adjusted my legs, not my leg.
So what was it very quickly, the relationship with you and Garth? How did that work? Did you know, you guys in constant contact on the phone? You know, how did he influence the covers with you?
A lot of my relationships with people that, you know, and you know, it doesn't matter that I'm not doing the interiors of the book. I'm still working with the writer. At least I like to, when I'm doing covers. And I've been fortunate enough to do, you know, I've had several, you know, long running cover gigs. And so, you know, one of the cool things about that is you get to work with different writers, you know, and I've always wanted to include them in what we did. Now with Garth and I, a little bit different, you know, in the past with Hellblazer and things of that nature, you know, I had little or no contact with Warren Ellis to start when he was on the book. We'd get descriptions of what he'd like to see, but I hashed everything out with the editor. Then he left, and Brian Azzarello came on board, and Brian and I were a pipeline. We talked on the phone, you know, and discussed everything before every cover. Then when Mike Carey came on, you know, it was a lot of email. You know, I emailed with Mike just to kind of pick his brain. And I always had scripts.
Right.
With The Punisher, I haven't always had scripts. During the Marvel Knights time, 37 issues of Marvel Knights, I didn't really have an editor and I didn't get scripts. So I was just,
making stuff up.
Just doing whatever I wanted to. So it's very tough to keep someone honest when
The Punisher goes to 7-Eleven. You know,
yeah. There's no leash. You know, the leash is off and they're just like, hey, you know, your next cover is due on the 28th. So, you know, on the 20th, I go, okay, what am I going to do?
Well, yeah, I got a Punisher cover.
Yeah, I got to do this cover. Do you have any idea what's going on the insides? With Max, Garth was hands-off with that, too. He never really... as far as I knew, there was never any Garth input until issue 50. And every issue since 50, Garth has wanted to get in on. And I don't know if that's because his time was running short and he wanted to have a little more input before he got off, or what that was. Maybe he thought, you know, Tim's kind of does whatever he wants. I'd like to direct the prick for 10 issues. I don't know. But, you know, Garth and I, so we have practically no contact. Any thing that they discuss that's Garth's idea on the cover comes from my editor. I don't really talk to Garth.
So Garth might not even exist as far as we know.
Garth may not even exist.
Wow, that's
for all
cool.
We know. But you know, I know Garth. We've had dinner, we've sat, we've been amongst friends and had dinner and did shots and talked about the things that we love, and we're very much like minds in a lot of the things we love. So in a way, we didn't really need it. We kind of knew, we kind of trusted each other, you know?
Trust is so important there.
Yeah, yeah. And he trusted me to do what I had to do. I mean, to him, I don't know how much care that he has for that stuff. I think he likes probably to have a good cover on his stuff, but beyond that, I don't know how into what he gets. And it's been so long since I've even seen Garth in a show or anything. It's like, even if I thought to ask him, it's you know, it's been years.
So also you mentioned in your blog, I just thought it'd be nice to talk about these people, the wonderful Punisher model, Tom O'Brien.
Oh yeah, Tom O'Brien, yeah. So. The guy who didn't want to model for me at the beginning. I hope Tom's listening to this. He used to be a DJ, he used to be a DJ at this bar where my wife bartended. And I met him once, and this was before I got offered the job. And then I got offered the job, and I was like, the first person I thought of was my best friend Joel, who I grew up with, who's the model for Red Sky Diary. That was him, you know? I mean, yeah. Joel would have been perfect for it. Actually, he wouldn't have been perfect for it. Physically, he was perfect for it, but facially, Tom O'Brien was perfect for it. And I remember the first time I met Tom O'Brien, I went, oh my God, that guy could be Joel's brother. He's like Joel's prettier brother, you know? And not prettier, but definitely more handsome, attractive in the classic sense.
Sorry, Joel.
Joel has a lot of character, and he's not ugly by any stretch of the imagination, but Tom's just way more, you know, he's got a movie star face.
Yeah.
Especially with the right light.
And your colors from day one, Grant Golish?
Grant Goliash.
Goliash.
Goliash is
how it looks like leash.
Everyone says, well, it looks like it says go leash.
Go leash. Go.
But if you just look at it and you pronounce the vowels, then yeah. you got it. Right. Goalie Ash.
I'm sorry, Mr. Goalie Ash, but
he's yes. used to it, trust me.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's the kind of name you spell over and over again, I'm
we
sure.
We just call phone, him yeah. Grunt, and that pretty much does it.
And you had your longtime editorial collaborator, Alex Alonso.
That'll be Axel Alonso.
Axel,
cheap. You dyslexic prick, you.
I'm just going to call everybody Phil from now on. Phil Alonso. No, Axel Alonso. I'm trying to read here. This is the first time I've read this.
You know, and it's funny. I think on issue 8, I have a picture of, you know, Axel. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but while we're you, brought
while
we're
up,
you brought up Axel, let's talk about him for a second. Axel was a guy who brought me in to really big-time covers. And Axel loves when people talk about how he started their career. He loves that. So I don't want to make too big of a deal out of that.
Especially when I mispronounce it Alex. So Axel was, yeah. was influential in your life, basically.
So well, yeah. Well, Axel got me Unknown Soldier, and he got me into Vertigo, and Unknown Soldier turned into Human Target, which turned into Hellblazer. So that was 7 years of my life doing that book because, you know, because of Axel. Cool. He ended up leaving DC, and he wanted me to come with him, and he got really pissed off when nobody, everyone was like, hey, we love what we're doing over here. What are you talking about? We're going to jump ship?
Come with me!
But interestingly enough, when Axel went to Marvel, we didn't have anything to do with each other necessarily. I mean, we tried to get involved on a couple of projects, but it never worked out. Punisher was at Marvel Knights. And that was being edited or ran by Joe Quesada's wife, Nancy, and this guy named
Nancy.
This gal named Kelly Lamy, and so it wasn't until Marvel Knights series kind of ran dry and they were going to revamp it and reboot it into the first Marvel Max title that Axel then became my editor again. It's like, dude, small world.
Yeah,
and. So that was cool. Axel not only gave me direction on the book because he's an editor who, you know, likes to challenge his artists. It was like being back in a familiar place. So it was really cool. On issue 8, so here's the story that I'm going to tell now. while he was at Vertigo, I created a character kind of in well, I guess Axel and I both kind of created him. I think the first cover I've used him on was this cover of this model, the Hard Luck Hitman, was on the cover of Gangland. He's sitting in the stall with the shotgun propped up against the wall, and there's a body in the stall. It's like you're looking at two stalls in a restroom, and you know there's a mafia hitman taking a crap on one side, reading a newspaper with a cigar in his mouth and a shotgun kicked up against the wall, holding a roll of empty toilet paper, and in the stall next to him is this guy with his guts blown out, the dude he just hit, and of course on his side of the bathroom in his little cubbyhole. He has a full roll of toilet paper. So, and so the hitman's looking at you like, I mean, the look says it all. It's like, for Christ's sakes, you know. And then, you know, he's obviously got to get up, walk through this blood with his pants around his ankles to get
toilet paper.
The toilet paper, yeah. So he made another comeback on the trade paperback. He was on another Hard Luck cover where, you know, he's run out of gas. He's on the side of the road. He's standing next to his car with a gas can in his hand, and his trunk's open, and there's a hand sticking out of it with a cop cruiser coming up on him. And again, he's like, oh, for God's sakes.
This is a TV series waiting to happen.
So on Punisher issue 8, now Marvel's Axel's back over at Marvel, and I'm doing Punisher. We bring the Hard Luck Hitman back to a cover, and it's a shot where the Hard Luck Hitman is washing his hands. He obviously just killed somebody. And he's got his hands in the sink, and he glances up in the mirror, and the Punisher walks through the door. And so he's got a look on his face that says, eh, forget, just my luck. Well, the soap dispenser on the wall says, Alon Soap.
Ah.
Yes, I'm so clever.
That is clever.
No, it was funny, because it was called Soft Soap or something like that, and I just,
Alon
it soap. Came to me. It was an epiphany. It may seem stupid.
It's like a little Easter egg.
It's my little nod of the hat to Axel.
So you look back.
Sorry, long story.
Long story to get to soap. I like that. So you look back 8 years, a billion covers, I think that is. What stands out in your mind as to stuff you did? Anything that stands out, a cover that you did that really stretched you or that you're really, really proud of? Anything from that body of work that you're really proud of?
There's actually a lot of them that I am. There's a lot that I'm not, which actually kind of that's shocked me.
That's just being an artist. That sucked.
Well, you know, you tend to, you know, I try to keep the bar set pretty high, so when I drop the ball, I notice it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, 100 issues on a book, probably going to have 25 of those, you know.
Yeah.
You can't hit a home run every time. So there is a good portion of those covers I'm not very proud of for whatever reasons, whether it was I felt I dropped the ball in the composition, whether I wasn't happy with the actual illustration. I think normally it's compositional things, and you know, sometimes you get lazy or you get rushed, and this is the reality of doing a regular book. It doesn't matter that it's only a cover. He can't get a cover a month done? Well, most times that's not really all I'm doing.
Yes, and there are other things going on.
Yeah, so it comes down to scheduling and how much time I can fit in. There's definitely those covers that I'm not proud of, but I would say that there's a good 20 covers in there that I think are among my best work ever. They'd be right up there. Mm-hmm. And then I have, take it down a couple notches, and then that midway point, and then you get below that Mason Dixon line, and there's some of that too.
The Mendoza line.
Yeah. The Alonso line.
What is it about? We'll sum up the Punisher here, because you worked on it for so long and you did such brilliant work on it. It's what is it about the character that really inspires you? I mean, what are you looking for every time you see it? What just kept driving you to into this character?
It's the easiest thing I ever did in my life. I mean, in terms of how I saw him and what the character was to me. Basically, once I had my model, once I had the guy that I knew could portray that, it was easy. And I don't mean that from the standpoint of, well, all I had to do was take pictures and my covers were done. I mean that, you go through and look at the body of work and the way the light that I try to show him in is a very bleak, you know. I mean, I'm trying to show him off, too. I'm trying to make him look cool, you know. When people pick up that Punisher cover,
he's
I want to
be badass.
Yeah. I want people to go, God damn, look at that guy's badass, you know. Yeah. And so I want them to have that quality, but I also want it to be, lonely in a way.
Yeah, he's a wonderfully tragic, amazing figure. I mean, it's a great story, so you really want to portray that. I would assume that that's really got to be inspiring as an artist to really...
Lonely, bleak, and ferocious, you know. Yeah. And not that I always show the ferocity, but with Frank, this is why he's ideal for me, is that, to me, he's not... We know he's a man of action, and we've seen that a billion times. So what I got a chance to do with it was show this guy, show his vulnerability at the same time. You know, like I didn't have to have him crashing through a plate glass window every cover, firing his guns off.
Right.
But I did that. Well, I've crossed into that. But
you've got to change it up. I mean, if it was every week, it'd be like, oh yeah, whatever. He's shooting his guns again. So I mean, it's kind of
always like just that there's an iconic quality to it. And that, as a person who looked at this kind of stuff when I was a kid growing up, you're like, God, I'd like to be that guy.
Yeah,
So that's really what's behind.
Except for the super tragic background.
But I mean, even that can be, whatever price you have to pay to be someone that badass. When you're young, I think you'd gladly pay it. You don't think about the repercussions necessarily.
It's definitely something you think about now, but at the time, you're right, when you're in there, he was such a cool character, you're thinking, yeah, that's rocks.
Yeah, it's like making a deal with the devil, But, when I was a kid or younger, I wanted to be the road warrior. He did not lead a happy existence, but I wanted to be that guy.
Right. And the world had to be destroyed in a nuclear fire, too. So.
Well, I mean, Mad Max wasn't so bad. It wasn't quite that far. And yeah. I wanted to be Max, too, from the first movie. That's the best way I can give you a glimpse into what, where I'm coming from with this, is that it's the way I present it and what I like to do with the character is very much born out of those exact same feelings that I had when I was younger and yearned to be in the skin of these heroes that I saw on screen. And I think that's why it's accessible to the fans too, because I think that because that's the driving kind of force behind what I tried to do with it, it comes across. And naturally it's going to then be very juicy for people of like minds,
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of them out there.
And the Punisher is it's literally a Shakespearean character. I mean, there's something really deep about him. So I mean, it'd just be a great subject to tackle every month.
It's Shakespeare. Yeah, very true. I mean, that's a very good point. And Shakespearean, yes, to a point. But also, the Punisher is, I mean, it's very simple. I mean, and that's what's so great about it is that the character is so pure, you know,
literally black and white in a lot of respects.
Yeah. I mean, there are gray tones to some of his life, but that's where he's dealing with people. When it comes to doing what he does, everything is black and white, you know, right or wrong. And if you're wrong, you're dead. I mean, that's just simplicity in that. That's really it all. And that's why people can't figure out why no one's been happy with the way Frank's been portrayed or you know, like the storylines of the movies that he's been in. So far, two, but we're about to be on three, and everybody's, you know, a lot of people have read a online script or scripts. So people think they have a good idea what this is going to be. You don't have the heart to tell people that, you know, well, you know, that kind of changes sometimes. You know, it's like the script that you read may not first, you know, it may not be the script they're shooting from.
Yeah.
And then when a director comes on board and all this stuff was written before the director came on board, then it's going to go under other rewrites.
You would think people would know that by now. I mean, it's like, you know, prior to the internet, when you knew something about how they did special effects, you were cool because you were one of the very few people who were like researched and heard about this. Now with DVDs and extras and the internet, I mean, people should realize that if something leaks that early in a film, it's a total sketch of a movie. It may have nothing to do with the film, and yet they all jump on it like it's, oh my god, this sucks. It's like, well, calm down, people. Watch the film and let them do their thing.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think it's a natural. It's going to happen because that information is out there and we wouldn't be enjoying the box office, you know, at the movie theater, the kind of money that those things make to the degree that we're seeing if you didn't have that even kind of grassroots promotion. Because even if someone's online talking crap about a script that sucks, it's still getting talked about.
No such thing as bad publicity.
Exactly.
Now, we're going to go talk about films in a second, but I just wanted to wrap up the Punisher comic book. You've got three more to go.
Right.
And then that's pretty much it. So this is a chapter ending in your life. What's next comic book-wise for you? Is there anything you can talk about?
Or? Who knows, baby? The sky's the limit. It could be anything.
You're going to do the Richie Rich series now? I think that's our...
Right after Scrooge McDuck.
That would rock. Wouldn't it just be fun to do one Scrooge McDuck thing? I think in your style. Oh, that would be...
I'm sure people would love to see a Punisher, you know, version of Scrooge McDuck. Yes, Howard the Duck. I'm trying to put my best focus and my best work into these last three covers, but, you know, having been rifled by this cold over the last 3 weeks, I would just, you know, it's like I got to think about even feeling good before I can tackle it that way. It's funny, I was just working on a cover that I thought was going to be kick-ass, and it ends up that I had to finish it while I was sick, and consequently, it didn't make it where I wanted it to be. And, you know, people won't know. These are little things. These are whatever things for me. But personally, you know, now I hate this thing that I would have, and that's part of it, is that because I couldn't pull it off the way I think it should have been pulled off and the way I'm capable of pulling it off, it makes me even more angry about it and like it even less, consequently. The next three, I hope to, you know, really pull out, not necessarily all the stops. It doesn't mean I'm going to do these knockdown, drag-out covers by any stretch of the imagination, but the way I execute the stuff that I'm going to be doing is the challenge I'm setting up for myself. I'm just kind of breaking into this new style. It's not a new style. It's actually an old style. I went back to my roots a little bit.
It's woodcut, right?
No, it's not woodcut.
I'm literally carving out of ivory.
Engravings. I'm getting more, I'm going back to that more kind of organic stuff that I did when I was younger. You know, not that I'm bringing in, you know, tons of feather lines and stuff like that, but I'm doing a lot more cross hatches and textures and dry brush edges and spotting whites and doing a lot of stuff where I'm just departing that much more from the hyper realism. It's there, but it's just done now. It's being done in a way that's kind of more freeform. And I don't think it for the people that like the current style, the style that I've been working in the last couple of years, that is still a constant. I mean, it's not going to be that hyper, but you won't even know. I mean, you just won't even know. People that know art will know.
They'll see it.
Yeah. But people that don't know art and technique, they'll never pick it up because it's subtle. It's going to be subtle, you know?
Yeah.
So
I did want to toss in here, by the way, since we just ironically mentioned it, but legendary comics writer Steve Gerber passed away on Sunday, February 10th.
I did not hear that. That's terrible news.
Due to complications from pulmonary fibrosis. He was the guy who created Howard the Duck. So we just were talking about Howard the Duck, and I just remembered reading this. He also was
the baby food company.
Yes, could be. He was responsible in the 70s for including Omega the Unknown, Man-Thing, and Shanna the She-Devil.
Loved Omega.
He also did, for the last two decades, Marvel Comics Submariner, Daredevil, Defenders, DC Comics. He worked at Nevada and Hard Time. So he's he was only 60 years old, which is very depressing. But,
yes, we're hearing a lot of this, a lot of younger people. And as a man who recently turned 40, it's one of those things where I'm thinking about my health for the first time. And it's like, that's like one of those first things, like if you've never considered yourself to be old, and at 40 years of age, I feel and I act and I do things and I live my life the way I did when I was 25.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
And your body says, excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole smoking thing and, you know, I have a daughter now and it's like, Jesus Christ, I am getting old. And the thing is it's feeling old. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the age. It's that you start to take on more identities, more of an identity of your parents.
Yeah.
And when you start to think that way, then you start to become that way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you hear about someone who's 60 or you hear about someone who's 50 or, hell, even Roy Scheider, who passed away earlier this week, 75 years old.
You're just too young.
It's too young in today's society.
Yeah, I want to see at least an 8 in front of that number.
Well, you know, I see Roy Scheider passing away of multiple myeloma, and I'm not even quite sure what that is. I haven't looked online, and I'm no doctor, so I'm just going to say I don't know what multiple myeloma is, except for the fact that it's multiple. A form of cancer, isn't
it? Yes, I think so, yeah.
So I don't think it's any secret that Roy smoked a buttload of cigarettes during the course of his life. And, you know, so I need to quit.
And you're on number 3 in this interview. So, hey.
Shut
up. Pay attention. Anyway, that was a little wrap-up there.
I get nervous.
A little wrap-up of Tim's wonderful time on The Punisher. So some other poor schlub is going to have to step into your gigantic shoes, I don't envy that person.
I don't know what I'm going to do yet, necessarily. I would like to pick up another regular book, but finding that regular book is a difficult thing. You know, almost have to kind of wait for it to come to you. Because
Can you lobby for stuff like that, or do you...
I put the word out, and I say, hey, I'm looking for something, you know, amongst my editor friends and stuff like that. But at the same time, I don't want to sound needy, you know? Yeah. And I'm not. I mean, I don't really need the work, but I do like the comfort of having something every month. And
here's a question that you probably, I don't even know if you can answer because we may have to edit this out because I'm about to ask. If you could choose any comic book right now, not any disservice to whoever's doing it currently, but just because it really would excite you to do, what would you choose? It could be anybody, any comic book company, anything. What would you want to do?
As I knock the microphone off.
Yeah, try not to hit the big black thing in front of you.
I'm going to skip the opportunity for a joke there.
Don't ask.
Would love to do like Deathlok, you know, cool. If I could do it the way I wanted to do it. I would love to do Steve Rogers, not Captain America necessarily. I've always wanted to
do $6 million man?
Oh, sorry. I've always wanted to do like a Steve Rogers book where he's an old man. You know, like he's a Clint Eastwood 65, 70 years old.
Cool.
And, you know, he's still the super soldier. He's still tough. You know, he means obviously he'd be a double Clint Eastwood 70 years old as he would be. But he's been put out the pasture kind of a thing. And there's a whole storyline I want to do like that. You know, one time I was talking to Bruce Jones about doing it with me. But
and that's why they shot and killed him, because you wanted to do it.
Well, maybe I can do it now.
That's right. No one would care.
But it's like, you know, I could translate to anything. The thing is that no, I don't want to draw a costume superhero necessarily, but I do want to draw cool imagery and cool people and cool characters.
Right.
And right now I am doing that with the Cal McDonald, the Criminal Macabre book, which not enough people are reading, unfortunately.
Are there more? Are you working on something right now?
Yeah. It's an ongoing kind of story arc series. So it's like, they collect, you know, they do 4 issues at a time, they take a month or two off, and then they do another 4 issues, take another month or two off. It's kind of like an oddball ongoing. Hmm. So, you know, I'm starting my 9th issue of that.
Cool.
And that's been cool. And I picked that up after I got off Hellblazer, which I was on for 7 years. So that kind of replaced that in a way.
Mm-hmm.
and I'd love to find something to replace the Punisher, something that I really dug. But you know, it really is going to have to be something special. I wouldn't mind if it was just some kind of something that wasn't necessarily a established character. You know, that it was a new character, something that might have some legs and some longevity and be around for a little while. I think that'd be very cool.
Very cool. Now, we were talking before. I think we had a slight miscommunication, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. Punisher movie. Is there anything we can talk about that? What are you involved in?
The Warzone. Yeah.
Yeah. What are you involved with that?
I don't think it's any secret. It's not that big of a deal.
You're designing the pajamas, right?
Yeah. I am the bunny slippers, which are incidentally going to be black death bunnies.
With guns.
Yes. Some kind of fold-out knife in the tip. I don't know. I am working on a teaser poster. Yeah,
cool.
For theatrical teaser poster.
When is that supposed to be released?
I would venture to say you'll probably see it around May. You might see it before that. I've yet to actually illustrate it, but I've gotten it to the point where, you know, my main elements are approved and we're getting ready to go. Ray Stevenson's seen it, and he was very, very jacked, which made me feel good.
Cool. It's going to be all stick figures.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Dude, it's just the Punisher coming out of black. I mean, yeah. I want to be, I was trying to, you know, like convince Lionsgate that it doesn't have to be rocket science. We don't have to hit people over the head. It just needs to be effective.
Yeah.
And actually we're pretty in tune, which was surprising to me, because most times when I work with an entity like this, I run into a lot of, roadblocks when I try to do something pure, you know, or you have a direct vision. But in this case, you know, it's like they wanted me a part of this. The reason that they wanted me a part of this is because, you know, what I've brought to the comics and that fan base and all that. And so in a sense, they're kind of being somewhat hands off because they don't want to, what's the word I'm looking for? They don't want to, I'm 40 now. They don't want to, water down, you know, what can be very effective.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's been very supportive. Everybody. It's weird. You know, the first kind of touch base I got was from Galen Hurd, who, you know, I've continued to talk to since we first kind of met each other. And Gail wanted to make sure I was going to be in. And I was like, well, that's very promising, but that's the producer talking. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, because that's the studio's decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it finally went through the food chain, and it was, you know, it was Lionsgate, it was Lexi, it was Ray, and you know, they really, the Bradstreet Hotel, that just cracks me up. They've actually got a location in the movie that they named after me, and I just think that's a scream.
How did they choose director, Lexi Alexander? She's a former world karate and kickboxing champion. I love that. That's my favorite biography of all time right there.
That's a really good question. I thought they were going to cast a wrestler as the Punisher, so they ended up casting the athlete as the director.
She's from Mannheim, Germany.
She's from Germany?
She's very scary. I'll be afraid of the Punisher.
We're going to get letters for this.
That's right. Lexi, don't kick my ass, please.
Well, Lexi's been great. I don't know what to make of her, because, you know, the only movie that I'm aware of that she's done is Green Street Hooligans, which I haven't seen, by the way. But, dude, I love the way she talks, you know? And I don't mean she's got a sexy voice, man. No, I'm invigorated by her energy and her, you know, commitment, her verbal, you know, like what she's talked about. And to me, you know, I mean, sometimes that's enough. I mean, a director knows what they want. That's really a director's job.
All you want from a director is that they know what they want. And I don't know what we can talk about here. I know that Thomas Jane obviously did not come back because he was not happy with the creative direction of it. Do you know anything about the plot or the script? Do you have any feelings one way or the other?
I don't know how much they kept from the last script that I read while Tom was attached.
Yeah.
So very, very hard to say. I think the basic storyline's still the same, and they've just made some tweaks. And sorry, I'm pouring myself a beverage.
It's not a beer, I promise.
No, it's a Guinness. It's more than Guinness.
It's Macallan 25. Good stuff.
But she impressed me, but apologize while I adjust myself again. God, cord's tied up. My trusses are bunching up.
I'm telling
you. I don't know what's
going on. My goiter is acting up.
Um, Okay, I'm sorry. Repeat the question. Tom, the script. Okay.
Something about the script of Punisher. Just in general, I mean, do you have any feeling about the project? And how involved are you with this?
I was as worried about it as Tom was when I read it. Mm-hmm. Or actually didn't read it till after Tom was gone. But I talked to Tom enough to know that it needed some work.
Yeah.
To be what Tom wanted it to be. And I very much agreed with that. It needed to be what Tom needed it to be.
Yeah.
It didn't need to be another popcorn film. It didn't need to be, and I'm not saying I'm not trying to cast an aspersion towards 2004, but that needed to be more bleak too. I mean, yeah. Tom, I remember Tom and I talked at the time when Punisher came out and underperformed and was just getting lambasted. Hensley was just getting his ass kicked. And, you know, it was not too long on the heels of seeing The Punisher that I saw Man on Fire. And I remember after I saw it, I was over at Jane's and I was like, you know, The Punisher should have been Man on Fire. And yeah. He looked at me and he goes, you're goddamn right, it should have.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I finally saw it. I actually saw The Punisher not that long ago. I feel bad that I hadn't seen it before this, but I watched the whole thing and that was my problem with it. It was that it was too light. It was like, especially the Russian guy comes in and he's got this goofy blonde hairstyle and he's wearing this red and white cartoon shirt.
Well, this
and
is
the whole fight was almost a goofball thing. I'm like, what are you doing?
It's so funny because there's this fine line, you know, studios think because it's a comic book based thing, it has to look like a goddamn comic book.
Yeah,
and
they haven't learned that yet, have they?
And it's, it's just simply not true. I mean, yeah. If you're doing Fantastic Four. And you drop the ball the way it was completely... No, sorry, I'm not going to get into that. But
we digress.
But sometimes, you know, it's like, it's okay if you just treat it like a movie and you stop thinking about it like a comic book. This isn't Dick Tracy because, you know, it's like in Dick Tracy they do all, you know, okay, this scene's going to be red, this scene's going to be blue, but it's going to be like banana yellow
right. And
blueberry blue and very technicolor kind of singular, you know, monochromatic kind of scenes.
Yeah.
That made sense
for Dick Tracy, right?
Yeah, but today it doesn't really make that much sense. And when you try to like put cartoon characters in a hard R movie, it doesn't work. And I think that I wish someone could have seen that.
Yeah.
It's like the Russian doesn't have to be dressed like the Russian was in the comic book,
right?
You know,
right.
He
looked like a gondolier.
And I love how they have the balls to do this. Like with some material, but they want to stay hands off against others.
Yeah.
It's like, what is it? Nick Fury being, or, you know, Samuel L. Jackson,
right?
You know, I mean, it's like, or Kingpin being Michael Clark Duncan.
Right.
Now, nothing against African American actors. I think the right guy for the job is the guy that should get it. But I love how they don't have any problem doing that if it means they can get the right guy, but they won't do it for. You know, it's like they won't pull the string when it just makes sense to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and it does go, so like the Punisher is not a comic book movie. It shouldn't have been a comic book movie. It was a very gritty, dark story.
They should have thrown the comic book away.
Yeah, and just said, this is the concept.
Put a skull on the guy's chest.
Yeah.
This is the concept.
And run with it.
His family gets killed.
Yeah.
Through you know, accidentally in a crossfire. It ruins his world. And he wages a war on the bad guys.
There you go.
And it's black and white. That's really all it needs to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, you just got to get cute with stuff. And you got to have the flaming cars in the shape of a skull ripping off the crow. And you just have to have this stupid shit going on. Now, hey, you know what? If you like that stuff, hey, that's great. I'm not saying you can't. I'm this is only my opinion.
I just think
that it's to be derivative of other things.
Yeah.
And the candy cane shit is just, to me, doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's just even back in our heyday in the 70s and 80s, if they wanted to make some film, they would just put some guy in a loincloth and give him a sword and, hey, that's all they want. That's all the kids care about. It's like, well, no, we wanted a story even then. You know, I mean, it wasn't until like, you know, a movie like Lord of the Rings showed, hey, fantasy can actually be serious. You know what I mean?
You know. I always say, you know, why don't we do this a little smarter? You know, in the case of where someone goes, we need you to make this element really big on the cover. Why can't I be subtle with it? Because we really have to hit people over the head with the concept. Well, why do you have to do that?
Because that's
the target audience, and that's how we appeal. You know, people appeal to them. It's a test market. There's a pie chart. There's a pie graph somewhere that says,
that's right, I have a spreadsheet.
This is the demographic, right? And my point is, and I always say, well, you know what? Why can't you make it smarter? Why can't you make it a little bit less easily decipherable.
Right.
And let people figure it out.
Make them reach for it a little bit.
People will still want to go see something good.
Yeah.
You know? If, I mean, I can't even like postulate the way. It's like, it doesn't have to be dumb to get people in the theater. It just, you know, if it's good, it'll still do the job.
I've always felt that people rise to the level that you put them there. I mean, if you make the movie stupid, well, then people go see it because it's stupid and they're stupid people. But if you make it smart, the smart people will go to it and the dumb people will go. Everybody will go
exactly.
Because they will go see it. I mean, a good movie will be a good movie. It doesn't matter what
that's
it is.
That's exactly, you know? My point. So why do we have to make dumb crap for this demographic when we can just make good stuff?
Because we're in a world where Britney Spears farts and it's big news.
We need another Soul Plane, don't we? and I'm sick to death of Britney Spears. I don't even watch TV, and I hear so much about. If I was a recluse,
yeah,
I would know about Britney Spears' troubles.
Yeah, there are hermits in Scotland who know about Britney Spears, and it's just wrong.
Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears, between the two of them,
yeah.
I don't even know where to go from there.
I know.
It's
four nice breasts, but other than that, I'm not
remember
sure.
Being in. God, I was somewhere off the face of the planet, you know, like just somewhere where you're just like you're not in your normal surroundings. I was in an airport or something like that, or I was in Toronto, and I glance over my shoulder and I'm looking inside this, you know, barroom window, and there's a TV up there, and it's in there rolling CNN, and it's a Britney Spears thing, and I'm like, God, every time I
nothing
can't
else
even
in
turn
the world
around.
Going on. Yeah, there's nothing else going on in the world. You know, genocide in Darfur. Forget that. We don't care about that.
Well, it wasn't like it was just like, you know, a little 2-second story, or they were just showing her picture and giving a little byline. It was like a half hour of Britney Spears on CNN.
Slow news day. All right. Well, we are going to continue on the movies thing.
Vomit.
But we have summer movies coming up. I mean, this is actually a pretty cool summer as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot of big things coming.
Does Indiana
here.
Jones come out this summer?
Yes, it does. I'm going to run down. From,
that makes it a good summer.
It does. Right. I'll be happy right there. But I'm going to run down. I'm going to give you like 30 seconds on each film, and I'm just going to say yay or yay or nay.
You're going to give me 30 seconds on each
30
film.
30 seconds. That's all we're going to get.
I hope you have a hook. Jesus.
That's the point. This is a lightning
Do
round.
We know each other? Good Lord.
It's my all job right. is to rein you in.
All right,
coming out on May 2nd, starting off the summer, Iron Man, directed by Jon Favreau, of course, with Robert Downey Jr., Terrence Howard, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Jeff Bridges. What do you think?
People want to strangle me, but I'm not as excited about this as a lot of people seem to be.
I'm incredibly excited.
I know that you are, and that's great. I'm
mostly because I trust Jon Favreau. I really think that he's going to be great with this material.
Well, hey, man, I mean, Elf was a great movie.
Yeah, and I think he.
And I'm not being facetious.
No,
Elf was a very good movie.
I think he's a really good director, and I think that that's what I was mostly worried about.
He's
that
no
Iron Man.
Peter Berg, though.
Exactly. Yeah. So why are you not that excited about it?
I really can't tell you. I think that a lot of the wind went out of my sails when I was at the movie theater a couple weeks ago, and I had to listen to Black Sabbath sing Iron Man during the trailer.
Dude.
And that really took me out of it. And understand, love Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Black Sabbath's one of my favorite bands. If I had 10 favorite, if I could only say 10 bands, Black Sabbath would be up there in the 10. I'm serious.
You just thought it was a little heavy-handed, do you think?
It was just... I will, you know, it's like weird. I wasn't even thinking about it because I was there to see another movie, and here comes this trailer, and it's going to be Iron Man. And somewhere during the time that I started watching this trailer, this thought kind of rose up in my head, and it was just saying this, don't do it. Don't do it. I was just getting that feeling. Don't do it. Oh, my God, they're doing it. They're doing it. And it's as old to me as, you know, like watching the trailer for Rambo, the first one, which was incredible, the rated fucking the rated X one with the bodies just being turned to mist.
Oh, the new one? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the when they finally got like a real trailer put together for it, that was just kind of something somebody let go.
Yeah.
You know, and it worked.
Yeah. got the buzz.
But then they had to put the trailer together for the 15-year-olds. And I'm like, why are we putting a trailer together for 15-year-olds when it's a rated R movie?
Because they're gonna get in.
Because they had to use When the Bodies Hit the Floor Again. I'm like, this is as worn out as an old tire. This was old 2 years ago.
How do you think, in general, the movie looks so far, though?
I'm sorry, I'm bitching about the trailer.
I'm reading in. Because I think it looks pretty cool. Yeah, I think.
But it looks odd too.
Yeah,
it looks odd. This Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. thing is in the trailer. I mean, I'm just like, I'm a fan of the old. I read it in its heyday, the comic book, John Romita Jr. and Bob Layton. And who was the writer? See, I was always an artist guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I couldn't tell you the writer.
Was it David Michelin? Was it?
I could look it up.
Myself that I can't remember the writer. But so you know, I'm very much in love with that period and that take and that, you know, remember the it was pretty hard stuff at the time when Tony Stark was
alcoholic. Yeah. That was cool stuff.
A great cover.
That's what I'm hoping they play up. And I love, that's what I loved about, as soon as I heard that Downey Jr. was cast, I was like, oh, we're in good hands.
It seems kind of quirky to me.
I thought it was perfect.
Which is strange. Oh, well, perfect. You know, I may be getting a different vibe off it, or I may be getting a wrong vibe off it. And I can't say I'm excited to see it, which may be a good thing because...
yeah, maybe you'll be going go surprise.
Yeah, I'd love for someone to drag me to it, and then I'm like, I'm like, wow, this is awesome. Well, I want to say
on
that.
On May 2nd, I will drag you there. Okay, yeah. Moving on. May 9th, Speed Racer by Larry and Andy Wachowski. Is it Andy, or isn't one of them a girl now? I'm not sure how it works. The directors of The Matrix. Emil Hirsch, Christina Ricci. John Goodman, Susan Sarandon, and Matthew Fox are in this. I was never a Speed Racer fan, so I have zero opinion on this.
Is Matt Fox playing Racer X?
Probably, yeah.
I hope he is.
Yeah, that's a good casting there. I think that it looks like it's fun.
IMDb that real quick so we can find out, because I hate not knowing. You know, here comes a movie. Here comes a movie that you know probably has a pretty big following online right now. People are actually awaiting this movie.
Were you a fan of the show at all? Did you see the show?
Yeah, I watched the show when I was a kid. Yeah. I'm 40. I'm not excited about this movie, and I can't even say use that as an excuse.
Matthew Fox's Razor X. Too. Yeah.
Oh, good. So
yes, I'm actually older.
You know what's 42. Funny is Matthew Fox kind of, you know, you put the mask on him, and he's just got the same shape face, the same shape mouth. He is Razor X.
Yeah, that is good casting.
That's like pretty
that.
Cool.
Yeah.
I can't say I'm going to rush right out to the theater to see it. I hope it's good, and if I do hear that it's good, I will go see it.
I think it looks cool. I've seen the trailers and stuff. I think it's cool what they're doing with the look. I think the look is very, very cool, sort of like live-action anime, which is a great idea. You know,
I loved, cool. You know, like Johnny Quest when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I didn't love Speed Racer when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Okay? I thought it was good, and I watched it.
Yeah, I didn't follow it for some reason.
So that's why I'm not exactly like, oh, my God, Speed Racer movie.
Now a Johnny Quest movie. That'd
but be a different I loved Johnny Quest.
Yeah.
Now, if I heard that they were making a Johnny Quest movie, I wouldn't be that excited to see that either. That's 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm just not, you know, I'm not.
I'm surprised no one has. That's got to be in development somewhere.
It's in development hell.
If Speed Racer does well, we'll see Johnny Quest next summer. May 16th, The Chronicles of Narnia.
Wait, Prince. Who's playing Chim Chim? I did watch the show. I'm not.
You know
what?
You know the show,
yeah.
Chim Chim is probably CGI.
Wait, what was Lancelot Link? Was it the
yeah
the chimpanzee when we were kids?
I love Lancelot Link.
Of course you do.
Chronicles of Narnia, or the Chronic What Goals of Narnia. Prince Caspian, director Andrew Adamson, who did Shrek, which is not really a good sign.
And by the way, I'm not impressed that the Wachowski brothers are directing Speed Racer either, because they dropped They had a chance to be legends after the first movie.
Right, with the next two.
And the heck happened to the second two, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who enjoy them.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them.
Those people must be shot.
Yeah, they should be. Because that would solve a lot of problems.
So the Chronicles of Narnia, did you see the first one?
I did see the first one.
It was all right.
I remember my third grade teacher reading the book to us in class, which was really cool.
Yeah.
I probably
couldn't do that today. It's got too many religious overtones. I think that, you know, schools would probably freak out if somebody's reading that in the class.
Well, schools should be shot too.
Well, that's
true
too.
I'm sick of this kind of crap too. This moral right, whatever this is.
The PC thing.
If you can't read C.S. Lewis in a classroom of third graders, well then
something's wrong with the world.
This is Nazi Germany. Okay, this is Dallas, Texas, with cops arresting people in bars for being drunk. By the way, that actually happened.
I know. Well, lots of things happened in Texas.
Yes, yes.
So, Chronicles of Narnia, did you see the first one?
I did see the first one, like I said, and I thought it was cast brilliantly.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed a lot of the characters.
The guy who played the lion was amazing.
The kids were all good.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little popcorny for me, a little bit.
Well, it was aimed at a younger audience, so I kind of cut it some slack.
I get it too, and I enjoyed it.
It was like Lord of the Rings light, you know. Basically,
okay. I wish it would have been like, filmed as seriously as Secret Garden. You know,
yeah.
If it could have gone that direction, I really would have loved it as an adult.
Well, that's a whole different story. Sort of similar to what we were just talking about, but kids' movies that treat kids with respect as opposed to pander down to them, like you said, A Secret Garden, which is a great film.
Right,
it's a very adult kid film, and I'm hoping that from what I've seen of the trailer of Prince Caspian, because it's a darker story. I'm hoping that maybe the tone gets a little darker, like the Harry Potter kind of thing, where as the series progresses, it's getting a little bit more adult, a little bit more dark, and I'm hoping right. that it goes that way, but I don't know. We'll see. I don't really care about this film.
I've seen the trailer. You don't care as much for...
About Prince Caspian? Nah. Narnia was fun. I read the books as a kid, but they didn't latch onto me like Lord of the Rings gotcha. Did or some of the other stuff.
Gotcha. Well, I saw the trailer, and I thought it looked okay. But again, this movie isn't really targeted at me, so
right.
I'm a bad kind of sounding board for that. And that's what's surprising is when you say, you know, Speed Racer, you'd think this is targeted towards me. I draw comics for a living. I should really be on board. I'm not really on board with it. You know, yeah. it is what it is. If it's good, like I said, I'll go see it.
But now, one we are going to be on board for May 22nd, which is Memorial Day, so you know it's got to be Steven Spielberg, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Directed by some guy named Spielberg or something. How do you pronounce Spielberg?
Spielberger.
Harrison Ford apparently reprising his role as Han Solo. Shia LaBeouf, Cate Blanchett.
I think it's time for I love the word they're using in Hollywood right now.
Reimagining.
A reboot.
A reimagining.
It's a reboot of the series, and there won't be any Harrison Ford.
That's right.
And. I'm turning into Bobby Dooley from the Phil Henry Show.
We're going to cast Kevin Federline as Indiana Jones.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like the Mad Max movie they're making. They're making another Mad Max movie, but Mel Gibson's not going to be in it. Okay, great Don't idea.
So anyway, Indiana Jones, you excited?
Another 20 years, maybe.
You excited about Indiana Jones?
I am very excited about Indiana Jones.
I think it's cool.
And have I ever told you that my wife is related to...
Karen Allen,
you have
told us that story.
Which
I love
is
that.
pretty darn cool.
I love that she's in it. I think that's a brilliant stroke.
It's great. It's great. Are you kidding me? And she's adorable. Even now, she's adorable.
Yeah.
And
I hope she's got a big part. I hope it's not just a little thing. I'm hoping she's really in the film.
She does.
Cool.
Oh, sorry. I guess
you know nothing.
I've read a script.
Yeah. You're a friend of Mr. Darabont, so you probably have a little bit of inside information.
A lot of that script I hear is intact.
That's what I've heard, yeah. But I know nothing about that other than it's just Indiana Jones.
I had the good fortune to meet Karen Allen in Dallas last October, and I have to say that, the October before last, a year ago October, mm-hmm. And she, you know, the whole thing about us being related got brought up, and we were like, yeah, Missy's first cousins with so-and-so, and she's like, you are related to me. How cool. And she was, you know, hugs, and she was wonderful, and... Got to spend a little time with her, and she's as adorable in real life as you think she is. She's
that's
still
good to hear.
I've had a crush on her forever.
Oh,
luckily it's by marriage.
That's why it was one of the reasons. I mean, there are multiple reasons to be disappointed in the second Indiana Jones film. But one of my problems was I didn't like the fact that they went back in time and then got Karen Allen out of it. I was like, oh, come on. You've got this great... chemistry between these two characters. Why do they do that? Why do they then go suddenly back in time and now they bring in a ditzy blonde who was a terrible character for
Indiana Jones? No one complains if it works.
Yeah, but it didn't work. It was just horrible. It's like
it didn't work.
I mean, this is not a slam. This is not a slam on Mrs. Steven Spielberg. That character was awful. I mean, it's terrible for Indiana Jones. It's
I don't even know that I really noticed it because when that movie came out, I was still, only 20 years old?
Yeah.
So I didn't care. I just wanted to see Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I don't know.
And while I could acknowledge at the time that it was not as enjoyable of a movie as Raiders was... It was kind of like Empire Strikes. I'm sorry. It was kind of like Return of the Jedi. It wasn't the greatest Star Wars movie, but it was still Star Wars. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I know. I was never that down on it. I think a lot of people were surprised about the dark tone of the second film.
Man, dude, you had to love Hash Round, please.
Oh yeah, yeah. Short
Is that his name?
Short round.
Yeah, short. It's got hash rounds on the brain. Hey. Well, you have to love baked potatoes, fried potatoes. What happened to that kid? He did a lot of stuff. Goonies. He did a lot of stuff in the kind of mid to late 80s.
Yeah, he's doing. Is he a director now? I'm going to look him up real quick.
I think we talked about this recently. It wasn't Long Duck Dong either. Getty Watanabe.
Yeah, I'll have to look him up here, but. But, I mean, I'm a huge, huge Indiana Jones fan. I mean, actually, I was probably more an Indiana Jones fan than I was Star Wars, and I love Star Wars. But, I mean, Indiana Jones was, like, really hit it home for me. That's a perfect film.
If we could tie all the voices in the world that have said or are saying at this very moment, I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan, you wouldn't be able to hear anything else because it would be a chorus of people.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm not kidding. People, you know, it's like people have having sex right now all across the world. And at the same time, and this, like, it's a fact, right? People are having sex everywhere right now. Not in my house, but not maybe even next door. But there's a million people having sex right now. There's also a million people saying, at this very minute, I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan.
Yeah, it's probably not much of a surprise. Really.
It's probably one of the most uttered phrases in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
So was I shocked? I think it was like 3 or 4 years after Raiders came out. I was talking to somebody about the movie, and the guy goes, yeah, I've never seen Raiders. I was like, what?
Get out of my house.
No, I mean, this was just, it was honestly, I mean, I was like, seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, if you see one movie, and everyone, I mean, this is, I mean, my grandparents know this.
Yeah.
If you have one movie to watch in the 80s, it was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
You haven't seen it. So, like, everybody that told you how awesome it was, that never convinced you to go see it. I mean, did you...
Well, some people are like that. Here it is. Well, actually, very quickly, Jonathan K. Kwan is what his name is now. In the movie, he was Key K. Kwan. Jonathan K. Kwan. He is a stunt coordinator and a martial artist.
Wow.
Recently worked with Jet Li on The One.
That's pretty awesome.
So good for him.
That's very awesome.
If you could be Han Solo or Indiana Jones, who would you choose to be?
I'd be Indy.
Yeah. Me too.
I'd be Indy.
I love the hat. I look good in fedoras.
Well,
it's a bald guy thing. I don't know.
I just love ethnic food.
Yeah.
And I don't think Han ate a lot of that. I think he ate a lot of, like...
it's a galaxy far, far away. It's tablets. Like the definition of ethnic food, you know?
Yeah, well, I think he ate a lot of tablets and space food, you know, stuff out of bags.
And he shot first, that's all I know.
You know, I see Harrison Ford sitting in a smoke room in Egypt, and I want to taste the food, you know? It's like, I know there was good food around the 30s, you know?
Okay, The Incredible Hulk on June 13th, speaking of a reimagining.
I'm looking forward to this... Strangely.
It's got Liv Tyler. I'm always looking forward to that. It's got a great cast. Edward Norton, Liv Tyler, Tim Roth, William Hurt, Tim Blake Nelson. I mean, wow, that's a great cast.
Tim Blake Nelson is General. Hi, Maya.
It's directed by the guy who did The Transporter and
Hey,
Unleashed.
Y'all gonna finish that?
So, yeah, I mean, this is
an interesting
thing.
Who's it directed by?
Louis Leterrier, The Transporter and Unleashed. So,
wow, what a strong resume that is.
Yeah. Well, Transporter was certainly slick, I'll give it that. But, I mean, it's an interesting concept. It's almost like it's like Hulk 1.5.
This is a man that's been groomed by Luc Besson, and hopefully his third time out, he'll really deliver. Now, actually, I like Danny the Dog. I shouldn't be so facetious, because I did like that movie a lot. It's just, Jet Li, in my opinion, Jet Li's best movie.
Yeah, it's a great film.
Throw Morgan Freeman in, it's probably going to be your best movie. Unless it's Dreamcatcher. Sorry, Tom. Tom knows that, too. Larry Kasdan kind of messed that one up a little bit. That's my Larry Kasdan impression.
So June 13th, The Hulk. What do you think?
I'm intrigued by this Edward Norton thing, but I don't know that I want to see him play that, the character that's...
Bruce Banner?
You know, going through a terrible thing, you know, and just wrestling with that whole emotional struggle kind of thing. It's like, I just saw him do that for 2 hours in The Illusionist, which I thought was an excellent film, by the way.
Yeah, The Prestige also, they came out at the same time. Prestige was really good.
Yeah, it sucks that they came out at the same time, because it's kind of like what happened with Braveheart and Rob Roy.
Yeah, what the hell is that with Hollywood? It's like, you know, meteor movies. We're all going to do a meteor movie. It's like,
well, you know,
calm down, people.
Just don't have them open up on the heels of each other.
And it cracks me up. 18th century magicians. That's a...
Yeah, who'd have thunk that there'd be two?
Cavalier and Clay, maybe, but still. But anyway, The Hulk.
But I want to, you know, it's I don't know that I want to see Edward Norton doing that character again necessarily, but maybe he'll put a different spin on it. I mean, I'm excited to see it. I think he's definitely a talented, I love to watch Edward Norton do his thing. And there is a really good cast, and the first one was so disappointing on so many levels, mainly because I was such a fan of Ang Lee's and Crouching Tiger was the movie he did right before that.
That was probably the biggest disappointment for me. It was like, I was so like, I can't believe he did this to this film.
It didn't feel like an Ang Lee film. It was weird. It was like, very this was like a job for hire kind of thing. So it didn't work. I mean, it has its fans.
It's got its moments. I'll give it some moments. But
here's another Hollywood reboot, you know? I mean, it's the first cast is gone. Wow, how weird is that? The Punisher and The Hulk, and they both came out the same year in 2004, right?
That's right. I think so, yeah.
So both those things kind of went miss, yeah. But they both got another chance.
Which is
kind of
weird because I liked Eric Bana. I thought he was pretty cool. And I'll watch Jennifer Connelly do anything because
I love Eric Bana.
I'm in love with Jennifer Connelly. But yeah, Eric Bana I thought was a great Bruce Banner.
Can't wait to see Eric Bana in Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you know, the problem with Eric Bana when I first heard it, he's a pretty big guy. I mean, he's already pretty buff, and I never think
Chapa.
Of... Yeah, I never think of, you know, Bruce Banner as being at all buff. And they actually, like, dressed him in, like, longer sleeves and stuff like that so that you couldn't see the fact that he had a huge chest
they
and
tried
all
tried to Peter Parker him yeah. a little bit.
All right, June 20th, Get Smart. Steve Carell, who I think is an inspired choice, The Rock... Anne Hathaway.
Until I found out that Anne Hathaway was in it, like when I saw she was playing Agent 99, yeah. I was completely stoked. And I'm not saying that I still that she's not going to be great.
Yeah,
I'm just not on her bandwagon.
Yeah,
you know, I've seen her in stuff, and I think she's very good.
Yeah,
but this character isn't sugary sweet. You know, this character isn't.
He's Barbara Feldon, man.
It's Ooh. Not. It's not. What is it? What's the Devil Wears Prada? You know, it's not that. It's different.
Yeah.
And it's a challenge, I'm sure. So if she pulls it off, I'll be very happy. I keep thinking she's Emma Peel. but no, she's Agent 99. And I think, you know what I do think? I think they'll have great chemistry.
Yeah.
I think she's very good. She's like Lindsay Lohan gone right. I'm serious. I think
that's a good way to put it. I
thought Lindsay Lohan was a very talented younger actress, yeah. and she went off the end because
I think she'll come back. I think she'll come back.
She
I think
will.
Brittany might end up in a ditch somewhere.
It's
but
a classic
I think Lohan
Hollywood will. Story. Yeah. You screw up, you go into rehab, your right. life sucks for 2 years, you come back, and everyone still loves you.
Yeah, exactly. She'll be fine.
But
so.
But yeah, I am looking forward to Get Smart. It's weird. I brought that up to someone else. I said, someone who I thought would be like, you know, like excited about it. I was like, did you see the trailer for Get Smart? Yeah. What'd you think of that, man? Didn't that look pretty cool? It was fun, wasn't it? Steve Carell's a perfect choice.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really that excited about it.
What are you
What? So, you know, you never know.
It's got Alan Arkin. How could it not be good? The next Pixar piece of genius, not to put the bar too high, but WALL-E, directed by the guy who did A Bug's Life and Finding Nemo.
Well, tell me what this one is, because I am not conversant with this film yet.
Well, you know, it's I don't know the full story, but essentially, I think the concept is that it's set in the future, and mankind has pretty much left Earth, and it's, like, filled with garbage and crap because we filled it with garbage and crap, and WALL-E is, like, the only inhabitant of the planet, and his job is to clean it up. He just goes around, he collects everything, crushes it into a little box, and then puts the box over here, and then
moves
on.
Is this a kid's film, or is this
Well, that's what I've heard.
Cross
I've heard
the line.
I've heard it's sort of... It's different. I mean, like there's not a lot of dialogue in it, especially in the beginning, and then a spaceship lands and he falls in love with this new cool super robot, and it's weird. It's like not one of their normal stories. So I have high hopes that because I'm getting a little bored with their. It's like okay, same theory, same thing. Look, a character is going to grow and make a choice. You know, what I mean, I wanted to see something different, and this looks different. So
you know what would
that.
Be really cool? You know what? You know, I was just talking about Johnny Quest
yeah.
and how if I heard they were making a movie of Johnny Quest,
if
I
Pixar
still wouldn't be. Excited. If Pixar was doing a Johnny Quest and it was going to be animated in that style and still have that, you know, the look of the Alex Toth, Doug Wilde designs of that show,
that'd be pretty cool.
And you made it a serious, fun action film like Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, because let's face it, Raiders was, as much as it was inspired by the pulp kind of stuff of the 30s and 40s, it was also inspired by Johnny Quest to a certain extent.
Yeah.
The whole treasure hunters and the whole, I mean, not that they're treasure hunters, but I mean, there's a lot of world galloping and adventures and stuff like that.
Actually, this is a good idea. Somebody called John Lasseter. Anyone know John Lasseter?
That would be, if you could do it the right way, wow.
Yeah.
I would be giddy with delight to see that. Yeah. But no, I don't have a thought on this. I'm not familiar with it yet.
I basically
Pixar.
I worship at the altar of Pixar. I'll trust them. You know, I mean, it's not I they've done so well with the past that I'm not even going to begin to question them until something comes out that may not be any good. But
I haven't
until
seen
then,
Cars. There's some I haven't seen.
I haven't seen Cars, but I keep hearing people who even say that it's not one of their best is still good. You
right.
know, I mean, but they're so even at their worst, they're putting out good films. So I have high hopes, and this one really looks interesting.
They're,
so
they're
I'm
always
get
fun to
way.
Watch.
Yeah.
Whether the, you know,
now here's one I know very little about. I did see the preview, and I thought it was actually pretty funny. It's called Hancock with Will Smith. Have you heard about this one?
Yeah, I heard this film was getting absolutely no promotion.
Yeah, July 2nd. It doesn't need anything. It's got Will Smith.
Well, you know what's funny?
It's all they
and
need.
You people tell me if I'm wrong. Okay, you know, I'm walking out of the movie. And I see this poster on the wall, and it looks like, you know, I mean, it looked like a vertical What was that movie that was out a few years ago about mountain climbers?
Into the
vertical,
into thin air,
limit.
Oh, right, yeah, right, right, right.
Something like that.
Chris O'Donnell.
Anyway, yeah, I see this picture of what looks like a guy in a parka and sunglasses on at the top of the world, mm-hmm. and I can't tell he's black. And then it was Will Smith. I thought it was George Michael. So, you know, like George Michael used to wear the Foster Grants, you know, in the late 80s. Well, next time you look at that poster, I'm going to ruin it for you. I'm going to completely ruin it. Look at that poster and tell me that you don't think that's George Michael for half a second.
Especially with the word Hancock and yeah. Michael. That's a
can't believe I laughed at that cheap joke.
that's a different kind of movie than what we're talking about.
But his lips seem almost pursed, and I think Will, like on that picture, he's got some kind of windbreaking like yeah. lip stuff on, so his lips look white. I mean, he doesn't.
Yeah, it's a really weird image.
It is a weird image, and I thought it was George Michael.
But I saw the preview once, and it's a pretty funny concept. It's like a superhero who's like almost a homeless guy. I mean, he's not very good at what he does, and he like keeps screwing stuff up. And
wow, I think I have to say it. I'm sick of superheroes.
Yeah, yeah. But this seems like an interesting twist. Everything I mean, I can at least...
Jumper is a superhero thing, yeah, too. Know, it's like a Heroes movie or something.
This one, I mean, at least I saw it and I was like, oh, okay, I understand some guy pitch it. It's a superhero movie, but it's not. You know, I mean, that's the big Hollywood pitch. But it's, you know, Will Smith usually makes pretty good choices, so I'll see. I mean, it could be fun.
Yeah, I need to see more of it. I really don't know anything about what it's about.
Then after that, we have something you might know a little bit more about.
I'm in touch, aren't I? Yeah.
Well, you live in your little hovel here with the cat and the whole thing. So, the next one is something we only have a few more minutes before we got to wrap up because we're talking forever. But the two I definitely want to talk about: Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, comes out on July 11th. Director Guillermo del Toro, who did Blade 2, which you worked on. Hellboy.
Who's doing this?
Some guy named something of the Bull. Guillermo of the Bull. Actors Ron Perlman, of course. Selma Blair, Doug Jones, Luke Goss, and Thomas Kretschmann. What can you tell me about this? I mean, obviously you might have some insider knowledge. Are you excited about this film?
Well, I'm excited to see Luke Goss show back up.
Yeah.
I remember Guillermo hired him for Blade 2. He played Nomak, or Carrier Reaper guy. Hmm. I'm not that familiar with Luke Goss, but at the time we were doing this and he got cast, he's like in a band, isn't he?
I don't know.
You'll find this out. People are laughing at us right now going, I can't believe they don't know who Luke Goss is.
What the hell is this guy?
Yeah, I think he's like, in fact, I got this weird message from him on MySpace from his page not too long ago. But no, I'm totally excited that Luke Goss is in it. And then... Thomas Kretschmann, who is a guy that I've been kind of watching him for a couple of years. He played the captain in King Kong, but he was in something prior to that, the captain of the ship in King Kong. But he was in something prior to that that caught my eye, and I've been following him. You know, it's like even you know, Tom and I were kind of fantasy casting one of his movie projects, and for one of the main characters, I had suggested Thomas Kretschmann. And Tom went over and looked at the page. Yeah, he's too pretty. And I'm like, well, yeah, but he's also rugged. And then I went, oh, okay. Tom's pretty and not pretty necessarily, but definitely handsome and rugged. And you can't have competing things going on there. So maybe Thomas Kretschmann might even be a little more sexy than Tom.
The gauntlet is thrown.
Yeah,
so we'll have to get Tom Shane on here to defend his sexiness.
But Kretschmann's one of those guys who I just, you know, I caught notice of him, and I thought this guy has some potential. It just depends on whether he can act or not.
Yeah,
that's the Carl Urban discussion that's going on right now on my boards. I'm like on the Star Trek thing. I'm talking about. I can't believe Carl Urban got cast as Bones because I can't believe he can get a job right now. No, and I love Carl Urban. I want him to be really good.
Yeah,
I'm behind him. I watched Comanche Moon and he was so not there.
Yeah,
and Steve Zahn was so unbelievable. I can't believe those words just came out of my mouth. I'm serious. Steve Zahn's always been a silly, you know, like just, you know, gregarious, loquacious, just kind of funny and silly and whatever. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he had it in him.
Yeah, yeah. He's stretching himself lately. It's really cool.
He channeled Bob Duvall, and I don't know if that's always recommended to try to channel the character. You know, in the same way, I think, but actually even a little more so than Ewan McGregor in Star Wars, which actually I really loved that there was a semblance of, you know, Ben Kenobi, the real, you know,
Alec Guinness,
in his portrayal.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you're off topic.
Yeah, Hellboy. I know. I'm way off topic. So we'll get into that next episode. Seriously. So
Hellboy. What do we know?
Hellboy. What do we need to know? It's incredible. It's Guillermo. It's Hellboy. It's Mike Mignola.
You worked with Ron Perlman on the set of Dark Country for a little while.
True.
So did he give you any kind of cool insight?
Oh, got some great insight.
107 days in makeup. That guy's insane.
127 shooting days, 107 days in full makeup. For Ron.
Amazing.
But here's a really great kind of tidbit about Hellboy 2. Ron told us that basically Guillermo cut the movie as he was shooting it. So they'd shoot all day from the crack of dawn or earlier until they wrap for the day, and usually they're 12-hour days. And then he would go back to his hotel room, and he would edit. He would take the previous day's stuff, and he would be editing as the film went. And the reason he did it that way was because they shot, I say shot for shot, but there's another phrase. They shot scene by scene.
Sequential order.
Sequential scene by scene.
Wow.
So kind of
rare.
Scene one through scene end. And it's very rare. And the reason it's very rare is because of logistics.
Yeah.
You have locations this day. Well, anyway, they made it work how they needed to make it work because Guillermo's a genius and he figured out a way to do it. And he sold the studio on it because he said, listen, I can have this movie cut. I can have your first, not only your assemble, but your first cut the day after we wrap.
Wow. Yeah, that would please a lot of studios.
Well, what that allowed everything else to kind of like really kind of move very quickly because, you know, you're halfway done with the film. Well, you've already got post-production units doing post on the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
So you dole those jobs out correctly, and what you have is something that is not only very efficient, it's very fresh, because you know Guillermo knew what he wanted, so that's how he was able to edit every night. So anyway, something that's rarely done, I think it'll make the actual film a different animal. That just having been done through that process, it'll be different.
Cool.
And it'll be wonderful, and I hope it's better than the first one. I really liked the first one, but I hope this is even better, and I think that it can be even better. I mean, you've seen him do Pan's Labyrinth, you've seen him do some other things since the last Hellboy, and I think he's proven that he is one remarkable director, and why shouldn't we expect something even better, you know, with this one? That's where his career is going. Everything he's done has been better and better.
I thought Hellboy was like 7/8 of a really good film. I thought I didn't like the ending. I didn't like the fact that they blew up the big mystical bad guy with a bunch of grenades. I thought that was kind of wimpy. But, you know, other than that, I thought it was really sharp, and there was some great dialogue and some great scenes. The scenes with Ron Perlman and that kid up on the roof.
Right.
You know, they're just having these great discussions. That's hilarious. I mean,
that's
really good stuff. And we can talk later about it maybe in the next show, but he's slated to do The Hobbit, which may be in some sort of legal trouble right now, but I think he's an inspired choice for The Hobbit.
I hate when word slips out a little too fast.
Yeah.
Because I would hate for everyone to really get on this Guillermo's directing of The Hobbit thing and then have it not work out. That would really suck.
It would suck because it's very exciting. I think that's a great inspired choice. I hope it works out.
Well, it is an inspired choice because there's only one guy qualified to do that movie after Peter Jackson now. There's only one other Peter Jackson.
Yeah,
and that Peter Jackson is Guillermo del Toro. There's not anyone else behind them in the line.
Yeah.
You know?
So wrapping it up, the last one we have to talk about very quickly, and I did a very bad job of keeping you in 30 seconds, by the way. The Dark Knight, July 18th, the next Batman movie.
Who couldn't be waiting for this one? And
I love the first one. I thought that
I love the first one
very
too.
Very cool. So I'm very excited about this, and of course the tragic, horrible Heath Ledger story, which is this is going to be like his last film, maybe, because Terry Gilliam is working on hopefully salvaging his film, which would have been Heath's last film, but this is going to be essentially his last film as the crazy Joker guy.
Yeah,
and that's going to taint it in some ways. Do you think it's going to affect their? It's got to affect their advertising. It's got to affect a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it does. It's going to affect everything across the board. And one of the things that I'm already kind of sick of, because I'm around it a lot, is fan response to this being his last movie and how it's going to be his greatest role and how it's going to be. It's somehow taking on these mythical proportions. And while I agree with some of that, I don't agree with all of it. I think there's a lot of wishful thinking in there. And that's not to say that you can't get excited or you shouldn't be excited by a trailer. But obviously we have very small bites of that performance in there. And I'm not saying that the rest of it won't be brilliant. But let's not elevate Heath to mythical status before this movie's even out.
Yeah.
I was a huge fan. I am a huge fan of Heath Ledger's. It's a tragic thing that he's passed away. And I want to say that the last report that I heard, and while I hate to dig into these areas in a conversation like this, was that that his death was accidental.
Yeah.
And it was not heroin related, and it wasn't.
No, it was like a combination of all these drugs. What the thing that got me was I read somewhere that he told somebody like a Jay Leno or somebody that he'd been working so hard and he couldn't sleep. He took like 2 Ambien and slept for an hour.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, that's bad. Your body is going, no. I mean, if you take 2 Ambien and you wake up after an hour, there's something wrong.
No, honestly, yeah.
He was taking too much into a hospital.
Yeah,
he was taking too much to try to help himself, and it's a horrible tragedy.
He needed to be treated for exhaustion.
Yeah, he's totally one of those guys who was going to go on to great things. I mean, he had already done some great things, and you're just like, oh, he's an actor. You know, I'm going to love watching this guy get old and act.
Let's maybe start our next show off and pick this up, because I think it bears, and I don't want to get into the whole, you know, kind of after effects of, but I'd like to talk about Heath and his work for a few minutes, and I don't want to drag on here towards the end of the show.
So then talk about The Dark Knight. Are you excited about it?
I'm very excited about it.
You think they did a good job? Christopher Nolan did a good job the first time around?
I thought he did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And I loved the score, and I loved Christian Bale. I mean, what's not to like? I mean, the whole thing was just solid and great and
I hope
slick.
They don't have that sophomore jinx or anything like that, because I don't think they will. I think this is a good creative team.
You know, Batman came out before the last 007. Am I right?
I believe so, yeah.
Well, then I want to say that Batman was kind of first to the punch.
Mm-hmm.
I look at Batman Begins in a lot of the same way that I look at the Casino Royale. It was reinventing, I think, in the right way, the series.
Yeah.
And reinvigorating it. Back to basics. They went back to an origin story.
Yeah.
And
not cartoony.
Let's not use the word reboot.
But we talked earlier about it. It wasn't cartoony. They didn't say, hey, Batman's got to have nipples and all this weird
stuff.
They took
the material seriously. Yeah. And see, they're not insulting our intelligence. You don't have to make crap. If you make stuff for people that are discerning, believe me, stupid people are going to like it too.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that'll be that's the name of the show. You know, don't make crap. I think that's
right. Stop making crap.
Screw the writer's strike.
One of Guillermo del Toro's favorite words, by the way.
Crap. I think it's good because he's going to use it a lot if he's in Hollywood.
Crap. Crap comes out of his mouth every 12.9 seconds when he talks.
All right. Well, that was the summer rundown of Tim Bradstreet's great thoughts about the upcoming, very exciting.
And Tom Racine's wonderful thoughts.
I had some good thoughts in there too. But I mean, Iron Man.
Was
Indiana
this our summer
Jones,
movie special?
I guess it was.
Yeah.
Because I just saw this great website on it with everything. I'm thinking, wow, the Hulk. You know, there's a lot of really good movies coming out this summer. I'm very excited about it. I get all jaded in the fall, and then the summer gets me all excited again. Then I'll be disappointed by half these films.
It's funny, this guy on the forum, you know, he said, he's like, I see 4, maybe 5 films a year. And this year, all 5 of those films fall during a 2-month period.
Yeah.
So he's probably going to see more movies this year. But he listed them, and they were all like comic book movies with the exception of Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, dude, you are the reason that the studios still do this. They love you. This is why this is why comic material is still viable. People like you. And it wasn't an insult. It was but dude, of all the movies you could see this year, and you've only got in a way, I guess I was trying to insult him, because I'm like, come on.
Right, go see Juno.
There's gonna be some great movies, and this is gonna be it for you, I guess.
Yeah, well. That's why he's paying his $12 and getting his popcorn. So
he's happy, that's all that's important.
That's all that matters. All right, well, that wraps it up for now. We'll be back real soon, and thanks for listening. I got one for you.
What? Whoa.
Ice Pirates.
Ice Pirates, ooh.
What year?
God, I'm going to say 83.
Close, 84.
84.
The year I graduated high school.
Robert Urich. Angelica Houston.
That cracked me up. Angelica Houston. Right?
Bruce. What the hell is his name? Comedian. Bruce. He's just a head in the movie.
Oh, he's
Valanche. Yeah. Bruce Valanche.
Yeah, he's the writer for, like, you know, Whoopi Goldberg.
I can't remember the black guy's name. That's pissing me off. And was it? Did I say Robert Urich?
Yeah. He's the lead.
It isn't Pamela Houston? Is that her name? Pamela Hensley? I can't remember who the chick is.
Mary Crosby.
Mary Crosby, that's right. Mary
Princess
Crosby.
Karina.
And that is a Crosby, by the way. That is a Denise Crosby's sister, yeah.
Michael D. Roberts is
Wait, you can't start yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was the black guy. I thought, you said you didn't
remember. You're going down the other road.
No. Michael D. Roberts was the Roscoe.
Well, I have to say, it's been... By the way, I saw this at the theater.
You're missing somebody big.
I know. But it's only because I haven't seen the movie in 15 years that I'm missing details.
Yeah, well, you're missing somebody real big because we just talked about him.
Oh, I said Ron Perlman, didn't I?
Oh, didn't you? Oh, yeah, I don't think you did. All right, well, I'm sorry, Ron
Perlman. It was funny because I think that was one of Ron Perlman's first gigs after Quest for Fire.
He played Zeno.
Zeno. With the headband. Remember the headband?
Yeah.
Remember how big headbands were in the 80s?
Yeah.
Yeah, all the rock stars wore them.
The guy from Loverboy.
All those.
Actually, you're right. This is exactly his second film.
Yeah, there you go. See? Right. I'm no idiot, man. I pay attention to the Pearl Man. It's funny, when we were on the set, I was like, dude, I remember, I went and saw Quest for Fire when it came out, okay? And it really impacted me. And not my colon, but it had an impact on
me. Like my molars.
And I was like, do you remember being on David Letterman? Did I talk about this on the show before?
No.
Do you remember being on David Letterman with Everett McGill and Radon Chong? And then he named the other guy. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I forgot he was on. I thought it was just you three. He goes, yeah, I do remember that. He goes, that was weird. He was like the men behind the makeup, you know, kind of thing. And I go, dude, I it's funny. I remember that episode. I mean, I remember, I see you walking out and you guys sitting on the chairs. And it wasn't like they were sitting on the couch. They were in like movie set chairs.
Yeah.
And Dave was standing there talking to him.
Because it was so amazing to see them out of makeup.
I was like, that was, it's funny because that was so long ago. And I've got some other really good Ron Perlman stories, but we don't have time. So.
We also have John Matuszak.
John Matuszak, that's right. Yeah. And passed away too soon.
He did, yes. Well, that's a story.
Even though
thing.
He played for the Raiders, I still have a lot of love for John Matuszak.
And for the bonus 5 points, who directed this?
Oh, God, I'll never get that.
Did he direct anything else is the question.
Yeah, well,
he's still directing. He has a movie coming out in 2008 called Mysterious.
Wow. Wait. Can you name something else he directed that you've heard of before that I might know?
The Philadelphia Experiment, right after this, apparently.
Wow, the Michael Paré.
Mac and Me.
Huh.
Tammy and the T-Rex.
These are kind of off my radar in terms of me wanting to remember the director of...
The New Swiss Family Robinson?
Nah, this is going to be a guy. I bet I've heard of him, but
I've never heard of the guy. His name is Stuart Raphael.
Yeah.
No, there you go.
Not familiar with
him. Not really familiar with him, but... Anyway, Ice Pirates. I thought that was a good one to try to get to.
Yeah, that's good. I love that you called up Ice Pirates. I remember, just having a good time with that movie when I was at the theater. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's awful.
But Angelica Houston's in it.
That's right.
So how bad could it be?
Robert Urich, one of the greatest actors of our generation.
Hey, Rob, you know what? They had a good time. That's
fine. Oh, I'm sure.
When you look at that movie, remember the Space Herpes?
Yeah.
When they just looked like they were having fun, and I guess if the actors look like they're having fun on screen, then why shouldn't we have
Robert Urich always looked like the kind of guy that you just thought he's probably the nicest man in the world, and you probably have a great time with him having a beer or something like that, but he was never a great actor or anything like that. I think he was one of those guys, and he knew it. He knew, he was like, you know what, I'm a lucky guy, I've got this great career, and I'm not going to be De Niro or anything like that, but he just seemed like a great guy.
He did some really solid stuff, though. I mean, like roles in like Turk 182. And Lonesome Dove.
Dantana, come on.
Stuff like that, yeah. Vegas. Hey, Stuntman Mike worked on Vegas.
No.
All right, next time, boys.